On this week's 51%, we speak with Dr. Robert Waldinger, director of the Harvard Study of Adult Development, about how good relationships can help make a good life.
It's really the warmth of the relationship that matters, and that having somebody who you feel will be there in times of need.
We also chat about how to make connections if you're lacking those relationships, and WAMC's Sarah LeDuc speaks with singer-songwriter Al Olander about finding strength in vulnerability and writing about love. I'm Jesse King. It's all up next on 51%.
I was standing around like one of those girls I had seen in a movie. The whole world was a movie back then. I had my sunglasses on. I wanted to be seen without seeing Shiloh Lita. I wasn't really in it. I didn't really get it.
You're listening to 51%, a WAMC production dedicated to women's issues and experiences. Thanks for joining us. I'm Jesse King. Happy Valentine's Day, or almost Valentine's Day. I thought we'd take time today to celebrate love and relationships in all their forms, because, you know, our loved ones play a big role in our health and happiness. Our guest today would agree with that. Dr. Robert Waldinger is a psychiatrist and professor at Harvard Medical School, as well as the current director of the Harvard Study of Adult Development, which is thought to be the longest scientific study of human happiness. The Harvard Study has been running since 1938, and it's been following a group of individuals as they age and have children, and it's even followed their children over the past 80 plus years. So researchers like Dr. Waldinger and his associate director, Mark Scholes, have conducted surveys with subjects, done blood work, ordered brain scans, all with the goal of finding out what is best for their development of what makes a good, healthy, happy life. Dr. Waldinger has done TED Talks on this subject, and he and Scholes discuss some of their takeaways in their book, The Good Life: Lessons from the World's Longest Scientific Study of Happiness. Dr. Waldinger says good relationships were found to be one of the strongest factors to having a good life. So not money, not things, not traveling and seeing the world, good relationships. And knowing how to cultivate and maintain those relationships, he says, can be the difference between a life of stress and loneliness and, well, happiness.
The people who were healthiest and lived the longest were the people who were more connected to other people as they went through their lives. So literally, the people who in their 50s saw more people, were happier in their relationships, those were the people who were more likely to be healthy and happy in their 80s. And at first we didn't believe it because, you know, if you think about it, how could the quality of your relationships with other people get into your body and shape your health? So for the last 10 years, we've been working on that, and many other labs have been working on it too. Many other research groups have found this same finding. So we know it's not just in our study. It's studies of many other groups, many diverse groups of people. And every study finds that relationships are incredibly powerful for keeping us healthy as well as happy.
So how do relationships help in that way? How does it, I guess, like, you know, weave its way into your body and help make you happier and healthier?
Yeah, well, the best theory we have, and there's some good research on this, is that relationships help us manage stress. All of us have stress in our lives, right? I mean, right now I'm having a good time talking with you, but an hour from now, something really bad might happen and I'd be really stressed out. What we know is that if I have someone I can come home to and complain to, or if I have someone I can call and talk about this, I can literally feel my body calm down. So what we think happens is that our bodies normally go into a kind of fight or flight stress response when we're stressed, and that's normal. But then we're meant to come back to baseline when the stress is removed. We think that the people who don't have good relationships and the people who are lonely don't have anybody to help them calm down. And so they stay in a low-level stress mode that includes increased circulating stress hormones, chronic inflammation. And we think that this breaks down your coronary arteries. It breaks down your joints and causes arthritis. It does all kinds of things to the body over time. And that's how stress breaks down the body. And that's how good relationships that relieve stress can protect us.
Huh. That's really interesting. And you know, I'm going to have to tell my partner the next time that I vent to him about my day that, you know, I'm doing it for our own good. Does the kind of relationship matter here? You know, obviously we're airing this around about Valentine's Day, so romantic relationships come to mind. But, you know, if you're unlucky in love, does that put you at a disadvantage?
Great question. No, it doesn't matter. So you don't have to be partnered. You certainly don't have to be married. None of that. If you have good close friends, that's just as good. If you have a sibling who you're close to, a parent, all it's really the warmth of the relationship that matters. And that having somebody who you feel will be there in times of need, that's what matters more than what their relationship is to you.
So how do we nurture our relationships and keep them healthy?
Absolutely. Well, we found when we studied these people over so many years was that the people who were best at this were active in keeping involved with other people. They practiced what we call in the book social fitness. And we actually talk in the book about how to do that, where they were in frequent touch with the people they wanted to make sure they stayed current with, right? So they would call on the phone. They would write letters back in the day when we used to write letters. Now it's texting and emailing, right? It's and calling on the phone and getting together in real life, which is harder to do now. But what we found is that the people who were really good at this were the people who made it a priority. And that's hard sometimes because, you know, we have busy lives. We take care of families. We work at jobs. We have so many things to do. But what we find is that you can combine being in contact with close people in your life with other things. Like you could call somebody every day during your commute or text them. You could plan to work out at the gym with somebody else, not by yourself. You know, you could do things that make sure that you connect with other people without adding extra hours onto your day.
How do you recommend going out and making new relationships? Because, you know, trying to make friends as an adult is hard. Trying to go out and date is hard. You know, if you don't already have these relationships to nurture, how can you better connect with people?
Okay, yes. So remember what you did if you ever went to a new school? What was the advice you should do if you went to a new school and you didn't know people?
Well, in my case, you know, I think I actually did know one person there, so I kind of just clung to them.
Did you join any clubs?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did do that.
Same advice goes for us as adults. You don't have to join a club, but the best way, the easiest way to make new friends is to do things with other people. Do something you care about. It could be something you love to do, you know, like, I don't know, gardening or playing soccer or whatever. It could be working for social justice because you care about that, right? But you do these things alongside other people who have the same interest. And if you show up week after week with those same people, you're going to start striking up conversations because you have this thing in common. Mm-hmm. And some of those people are more likely to become friends over time. So find something you love to do, something you care about, and do it alongside other people again and again.
How do you know if a relationship is, I guess, truly healthy? Like, how do you know whether it's improving both of your lives or draining you?
Ah, yes. Well, it's kind of an overall check-in we have to do. Like, does this person mostly drain my energy? Or is it a mixed bag? Most of us in relationships have mixed feelings about other people, right? Like people annoy us and we care about them. We like things about people and there are things we don't like. And so it's really a balancing act. One way to check in about this is to think to yourself, if this person weren't in my life, how would I feel? And if on balance, it looks like it would feel better, maybe it's a relationship you can let go of. If you say to yourself, oh my gosh, it would be terrible if this person weren't in my life. Then we can spend time making that relationship better rather than stepping away from it.
Your book talks a little bit about something called the Wiser model for handling emotionally challenging situations. Tell me about that.
Yeah, well, the Wiser model is based on the fact that we're always filling in the blank with other people. So let's say someone says something and you think to yourself, why did they say that? Were they being disrespectful? Or, you know, what was their motive? Or you get an email from your boss saying, see me tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. And that's all you get. And your mind goes wild, right? You don't know, why did they send that email? Okay, so the Wiser model is just a simple way to slow things down. Rather than filling in the blanks and saying, oh, my boss sent me that email because I'm in trouble. Or that person said that thing because they hate me. The Wiser model says, slow it down. The W stands for watch, meaning sort of watch the situation. Okay, why did this email come right now at the end of the day? Think about, okay, how am I interpreting? That's the I. How am I interpreting what's going on? And are there other ways to think about possibilities, other interpretations of why my boss sent that email? Then select your response. So how could I respond? Okay, I could ignore an email. I could send back an angry response, or I could do something different, right? So select your response, then engage. The E is engage, do whatever you're going to do. And then the R is see how it worked out. Reflect back and say, okay, this is how I handled that puzzling email this time. How did that work out? So the Wiser model is simply a way to not fill in the blanks too quickly, to get more information, slow it down, choose our responses to puzzling situations, and then look back on how well it worked out this time.
I like that, you know, just to build that practice of slowing down before you panic.
Exactly. And have you ever found yourself tempted to you get an email and it makes you angry and you start writing a nasty email back? So the Wiser model says, okay, don't send that email. Stop, reflect, think about it, maybe sleep on it. The next morning, think again, okay, what would I like to have happen with this person, right? So there's so many points where if we put a pause in, it can be so helpful rather than just reacting immediately.
Well, Dr. Waldinger, thanks so much for joining us today. Is there anything else from The Good Life that you'd like to share with us, you know, about the study, about relationships, or just about happiness in general?
Yeah. One misunderstanding is if I'm not happy, I'm not doing my life right. And, you know, one of the things that's important to say here is that none of us is happy all the time. Happiness is a feeling that comes and goes. We can have a feeling that life is okay and we can be content, but none of us is happy all day long, every day. And that's okay. And I think that's one of the things we should just name, because there's this kind of relentless quest to be happy. And what's wrong with me if I'm not happy all the time? Well, nobody is.
Dr. Robert Waldinger is the director of the Harvard Study of Adult Development and the co-author of The Good Life, Lessons from the World's Longest Scientific Study of Happiness. It's now in paperback, and you can find it at most major booksellers. To learn more about Dr. Waldinger's work, you can check out his website, robertwaldinger.com. We bring you now an interview with singer-songwriter Al Olander. Olander, who calls Kingston, New York home, has a lot going on right now. For the past year, she's been touring with folk and rock acts like Shovels and Rope and Deer Tick. She's even filled in for Nico Case on a few shows with the New Pornographers. And for the past few years, Olander has been marking the time around Valentine's Day with a concert at Kingston's Old Dutch Church, which she calls Valentine's Day. Olander spoke with WAMC's Sarah LeDuc about why she does it, how she's worked to build her career, and why she's focusing on love songs as she works on her second album.
We met last year before Valentine's Day. It was the first time we had you in. It was like electric, I would say. Personally electric. And then I attended Valentine's, which is a very special event. But for people who mayn't have heard that interview or mayn't have had yet the opportunity to see the magic at the Old Dutch Church, tell us how Valentine's Day began and what it means to you and what it is this year.
Oh, I can't believe you came. It made me so happy that you were there. You know, winter is tough for me. I get the sads pretty hard. Do you get the sads, the winter sads?
I do.
And I wanted to do two big shows in the Hudson Valley of my home in Kingston. I wanted to do a summer show where I flourish in my bikini. And then I wanted to do something in the winter that we could look forward to, that we could brighten up our deep, dark February. And we thought, oh, let's do a Valentine's Day show. And we all went, or an
Valentine's Day show. Yep, that's good.
And we thought, let's do it at the Old Dutch Church, intimate, beautiful. And I had no idea the magic that would happen by bringing this community of mine together to put on this beautiful labor of love. And it's a show.
It's a spectacle even.
You said it.
I did.
Our theme this year is Sweethearts of the Rodeo. So we've turned the Old Dutch Church into a saloon, a sal with al. Saloon. Mm-hmm. You guys get it.
Yeah.
And we've decided to do some really like banging country songs and some lovers quarrels in the church of desire and passion. And we've really put on a true something. We've been practicing and I have this full band and I want full denim, bandanas. I just want everyone to feel their cowboy fantasy, their rodeo fantasy. Bolos. Things are coming to me as if in a dream. Spurs.
Spurs. Oh, Spurs feel dangerous to me, sure people can handle
them. Dulled down Spurs.
Yes. Al also has with us in studio here at WAMC her guitar, so we get to hear some music. Are you ready to play a song for me, my darling?
I would love to play a song for you.
Would you tell us about it first?
Oh, yes, of course. Sarah guides me through radio. This song is called Minnesota Waltz. It's about staying warm in the cold. I wrote it thinking, how do I survive a winter? And it was on tour in all these cold places. So I thought I would give you, to go on theme, a waltz of sorts.
With just a change. When the sun shoots up again.
That is such a beautiful song. I love it. When you said you were going to play it today, I immediately started humming it, of course.
Immediately, it made me feel so good. I was like, oh my goodness, how could you know any song of mine? How, Sarah
I can't
LaDuke?
Believe how often I have to tell you, Al, you're good.
Sarah.
And you got to own that, babes.
You know what? I am good. I am good.
You are.
I feel it. No, I...
touring all the time.
I'm touring all the time.
And what is it like? You've made... We were talking about the Instagram highlight you made of the looks for Valentine's Day, but there's another highlight, your Road Dog Diaries, where you give a very, very insightful and sweet look at what it's really like to be exhausted on the road all the time while bringing your art to the people.
Do you like my little diaries
I
on
do.
The internet?
Of course I do.
Am I too old to do it?
I have no idea. I'm older than dirt.
I thought, okay, I just don't want anyone to bully me on the internet for making these little diaries, but they haven't yet. And I think they've been so nice to make. And I like showing folks that what it's like, yeah, to drive my Mazda many thousands of miles all year and to be in many different places. And it's been so fun to just be like, here I am at the gas station. Here I am at the Holiday Inn, and here I am playing incredible shows with folks like Shovels and Rope, who took me on tour all last year, and it was the best thing in my life, really.
You also played with Deer Tick last year, and you have a couple tours coming up.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us about the ones coming up?
Just right after Valentine's Day, I'm going out with Raylan Baxter. So excited about that. And then at the end of March, starting April, I'm out with John Moreland, and those are just some... I can't believe I get to say that.
How do you become the opening act for one of these tours?
Isn't that the question everyone wants to know? I think it's a combination. It's a combo meal. It's having an amazing team, which I have, who advocate for me. It's putting myself out there. It's seeing tours and saying, I want that. And it's saying, I want that for a year. I wanted to tour with Shovels and Rope for 2 years. I asked, submit me. And you just keep going. And then one day, and this is much like with John Moreland, it's cosmic gumbo too, but
it's a lot of work.
It's a lot of work, and putting yourself out there and playing many shows and meeting people and being not perfect but the best version of yourself whenever you are out there playing your songs, and hope someone sees it. But having a team really does help. My agent and my managers really, they're so good at, like, they send such pro emails, and my emails have all emojis in them and say XOXO Gossip Girl, and it's ridiculous. So I'm very, very lucky. And my mom is really supportive. She'll name the most famous person.
Oh, of course.
She'll name the most famous person, Sarah, and say, you should absolutely be opening for Taylor Swift. Like, you're right, Mom. And I'll have them send an email.
You've been writing and recording new music? Tell me where you've been finding inspiration and what's happening right now.
I have 8 songs of a new record finished. I'm writing so many new songs because, have you ever been inspired by having such a big crush? Just like the inspiration of a crush and of having butterflies and of feeling these magic feelings. I just am writing so many songs, and my brain is fuzz, and I am melted. I'm a puddle, and I'm so excited for this sophomore record to come out, and I'm really trying to get it out to these nice people that are supporting me and asking for it, and I keep doing that answer like, yeah, June. But who knows, it could be June.
It could be.
It's my birthday month, so it's a little selfish. But yes, as soon as I'm finishing the last songs at the end of February, and I have a title, and I have the tracks, and I have all the things.
And you're feeling good about it. You're happy with what you've created.
I think I have. I wrote a lot about heartbreak again. I wrote a lot about where I live, and I wrote about all the people I love and all the friendships I've made. And I wrote things that you can sing along to in the shower, in your car.
Since you are such a open, beating heart, is that ever hard? When the road is hard or the world is hard, how do you cope with tough things, Al? Tell us all how to do it.
I'm going to tell you the secret is that, and this is actually the secret, is that for a long time in the music industry, I thought I needed no one. Maybe if I didn't let anybody love me, then I couldn't get hurt. But I realized that the only way that I can't get hurt is if I let people love me. So I really try, when I sing songs, even though they're vulnerable and even though they're true and even though it scares me and I'm hurt and maybe I'm depressed that day and maybe I'm anxious, if somebody is in the audience and I look at them, I'm like, we are here together. So it's my favorite thing in the world, and it has saved my life. So
that is beautiful. Thank you for entertaining the question.
You asked me such
slapping
beautiful.
It away.
I could have, though, but I would never, because you ask such, you bring out a truth in me that feels very natural.
That's very kind of you, and I'm really proud that you like me back. That's how I feel about it.
You know what? Anyone listening, I hope they can feel it. It is electric again. It is. Sarah, you are so special.
Mm.
Yeah, I love talking to you.
Kiss whoever you want and I'll be here.
That was singer-songwriter Al Olander speaking with WAMC Sarah LaDuke. You can find Al's music and tour dates on her website, alolander.com.
Didn't mean to cry before the show. When somebody's mean to me, I can't let it go. I want it all at once. When you look at me, I know that I'm enough. I feel like I'm catching up. I have always been the runner-up.
Thanks for joining us for this week's 51%. 51% is a national production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio in Albany, New York. It's produced and hosted by me, Jesse King. Our associate producer is Madeline Reynolds, and our theme is Lolita by the Albany-based artist Girl Blue. Just a reminder that you can listen to 51% anytime at wamcpodcast.org or wherever you get your podcasts. And you can stay in the loop on all of WAMC's shows by signing up for our weekly newsletter, Airwaves, at wamc.org. We hope you'll join us next week. Until then, I'm Jesse King for 51%.
I was every single girl, I was nobody else, I was so sure of myself. I was 15 and a half, he was a hollow laugh. And I lost my cool somewhere along the way. At night and down the hallway, I had to learn how to look away. I lost my cool, no electricity. Hot rain on the concrete, sweet bells in little